Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 16th of June. A delight to have you with us. And let me introduce everyone to you on the panel so you know who they are. Just a reminder, we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here, and we're thrilled. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here with our wonderful cast of characters and all of you out there.
Excellent. Anything new and exciting going on in your world? Anything fun this weekend you've got planned?
Yeah. We're going to see... Kate McGuire, as you know, is one of the most brilliant people, and we all love her.
Love her.
And I mean, and they're doing it at the Stockbridge branch of her place, her empire there, the Colonial Group. They're doing the Millionaire Quartet.
Yes.
And that's about Johnny Cash and Elvis and Orbison.
All in that room at one time.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, the four guys.
It's going to be great.
At the Unicorn Theater.
Yeah, I can't wait. And then I believe we're going to at some point in the near future, to the opening of Jacob's Pillow.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, the culture season is alive
and well, so it's just getting started.
We're looking forward to it. Author, activist, and dear friend Barbara Smith is with us. Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
Good morning.
It was a delight to see you yesterday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being in the audience and being with us. And I'm glad that you're with us this morning to talk. We also welcome back Aaron Pacitti. Do I say that right? How do we say that?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, well, you have a secret, right, for how to say your name?
Yeah, it's like New York Pacitti.
New York Pacitti.
I love that.
Yeah.
He's the chair of business at an associate professor of economics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. And Aaron, it's always very nice to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
All right. Okay, well, let's start where there's a lot to talk about, as always. We had a whole range of topics to talk about, and we pretty much just stayed with the personal investigation into Donald Trump yesterday when we talked on the panel. So we do have other things to look at today. I do want to start, though, I guess, with the Russia probe, because the president has lashed out on that probe. He had another Twitter tantrum this morning. And I don't know, I guess that sounds derogatory, but I don't know how else. I mean, I think it's an apt description. It was a bit of a...
I thought it was kind of mild myself.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, not maybe not a tantrum, just a little...
No, no. I thought your description of
it was mild. I gotcha. Okay. I just don't know if that... Because, whatever. We have this ongoing debate in journalism as to whether these are official statements by the president or these are just, this is a tantrum.
But so far, the courts are treating these statements as part of the record. In order to prove, for example, that he didn't want Muslims in the United States, you take these tweets and these remarks that he's made and it becomes part of the record and judges have cited them. And
so,
I think that's appropriate.
In referring to Robert Mueller, the man who the special counsel who is leading this, he said that it's a witch hunt, the single greatest witch hunt in American political history. And he said it's being led by some very bad and conflicted people. Also, he said that, and the other big news in this is that Mike Pence, who is otherwise known as the Vice President of the United States, lawyered up yesterday, which I guess is not a big surprise, but he lawyered up. And the other story that came out of yesterday that seems important is that the special counsel is not only investigating Donald Trump and personally investigating Donald Trump for obstruction of justice, but is also investigating Jared Kushner and having and specifically investigating him on his business dealings.
Not since Teapot Dome have we seen anything this juicy.
So there is a lot. And now the other thing here, and I have to bring this up, so if you'll just give me a moment. Alan, so first of all, where do you make of where we stand right now with what we're seeing over the last 24, 48 hours?
Well, I have been using one analogy, and I don't think it's wrong. Barbara, maybe you agree with this, and maybe not, but the ball of twine keeps unraveling.
I think that's a good metaphor.
I think that's what's happening, you know. And, metaphor is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So, especially if you were an English major.
And I was.
Yeah, see? And there you go. And so I think it's unraveling. I think, you know, it makes sense that a lot of people are getting lawyers now because they're going to get asked a lot of questions by a lot of people. And usually you get a lawyer when you're a little bit concerned about your legal safety. Now, that's not always so. These are shark-filled waters, and I'm sure that somebody told them to get a lawyer. But, you know, I'm of the opinion, and there's plenty of money to get a lawyer with, you know. They have all of these campaign funds and funds of that kind, so why not get a lawyer to do that? But maybe, just maybe, when you do that, you give people the impression you have some reason for lawyering up.
True. So we have the story about the obstruction of justice inquiry. We have the story about Jared Kushner. Then enter Rod Rosenstein, who is the deputy attorney general, of course. Mm-hmm. He was the one who wrote the James Comey firing memo. He was also the man who appointed Bob Mueller as special counsel in the Russia investigation. He also was the person who testified this week that it was up to him whether he would fire Mueller or not. The president could tell him to do that, but it would ultimately be his decision, and that he said he would continue with Mueller unless there was something extraordinary that he didn't feel that he was right and up for the job. Then last night,
this is the biggie.
He sent
somebody
out,
leaned on him.
Then he sent out a statement, and I think by all, it seems that for all of us who have looked out this, it seems, in a word, odd. Here's the statement. Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch or agency of government, with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. Americans should be skeptical about anonymous allegations. The Department of Justice has a long-standing policy to neither confirm or deny such allegations. This was a statement that was made that seemed unprompted by anyone, certainly in the media, but...
Sounds prompted to me.
Sounds prompted from the president,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, hello. I'm making this up. Making it up now. The phone.
This is a simulated conversation.
Yeah,
a
simulated conversation. Hello, listen. Jeff and Rosenstein. Look, these are, the Justice Department is here to prosecute leakers. Will you find those leakers, please? And this becomes the reaction.
Here's the line that got me. Particularly when they do not identify the country.
I don't know why that matters.
No, it means he knows something.
Oh, man.
I think that's what he's implying, right? That he knows.
Well, I don't know whether he believes that the Russians are
the Russians
into, or the who?
The Russians. The Russians are the whole deal, right?
Well, who else would be leaking?
I don't know. I think. Never mind. I'm not going there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's almost universal. So. You know, me, as far as I'm concerned, he may be implying it's the Russians, and we know that the Russians are interested in as much chaos as possible.
On both sides.
Right.
So would you put it past the Russians to just stir the pot a little bit more?
I mean, the Russians have an economic incentive, especially the Russian oligarchs in a president who's friendly or turns a blind eye to what's happening over there. Yeah, they want chaos. They want to largely upset the smooth functioning of American democracy.
And not only American democracy.
Sure,
You're quite right, Professor. But also they want to upset the entire, you know, united group of people who have traditionally been together
right.
and formed NATO and everything
right.
else.
Because that distracts. I mean, what's been happening is that all of this attention has been distracting Trump from doing anything substantive, which maybe is a good thing because some of his more substantive ideas seem to be very harmful.
One thing here about, well, two things. First of all, that the Chris Caliza of formerly of the Washington Post, now of CNN, said that, okay, the statement is 62 words long, but really it boils down to fake news. That's what ultimately what he's trying to say is fake news. So, but what does, when you have a story like the Post story regarding the personal investigation into the president and obstruction of justice, that story had five independent sources from their reporting, not to mention the fact that the New York Times did a separate story which also had additional sources to that. So I understand you don't want people leaking and saying things that you don't want them to say about you, but by the same token, when you look at the stories. And I don't think it's any – doesn't it make perfect sense, given what we have been going through over the last several weeks, that Mueller would be doing an investigation into obstruction of justice?
Well, I don't have any question. Look, they know Mueller is hot on the trail. They have to stop Mueller from what he's doing. So they're going to create all kinds of ways the president maybe, or the president's people may be calling Rosenstein. Mueller may be fired. We hear that. They leak that themselves. And by the way, they're the great leakers of all time, despite the fact that they say that, you know, other people are leaking. They leak stuff all the time. And one of the things they were leaking is from a friend of Trump that maybe Mueller would be fired. That's a warning shot over Mueller's head. Watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned Rosenstein here, Joe, because obviously the one thing we have learned from Preet Bharara and from everybody else is you take the president's phone calls or he fires you. So here's Rosenstein, right, who appointed Mueller, but who obviously is under a lot of pressure to play for the team that he signed up to play for.
And they're acting so guilty. This has been said for quite a few weeks, if not months now. The moves that they make just telegraph to anyone who's observing, we're guilty. We're running scared. We're guilty. Why in the world would this assistant attorney general come out and say something like that? Didn't he say it yesterday evening?
I mean, last night, late last night.
Yes. I mean, what is going on? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
See, I know what's going on, but I can't prove it.
And, you know, when you kind of hang a sword over Mueller's head, it's a sign that this guy's hot on the case. And that could make things, I mean, that makes things look worse for the Trump administration.
But they never know that. He doesn't know that. He thinks he's got his base, and as long as he has that base, he's okay.
But the thing, you know, let me just say, having his base doesn't, I hate using that word, doesn't overarch and nullify constitutional functioning in the United States. Having his base, at a certain point, he can have all the base he wishes and all the screaming crowds he wishes. This is a nation that has a constitution. And three branches of government.
Or had one.
And, yes.
And this
it's in a museum somewhere, or in an archive somewhere.
And, you know, this investigation isn't going to be decided on a popular vote. So he might He might have his base, but the decisions are very technical and legal.
Yeah, the screaming crowds are not going to make these decisions. The Justice Department, FBI, special counsels, and the judicial system will be making some decisions. We'll see how it goes.
Welcome to the post-truth world.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that we can depend upon Congress, though, until a certain point, right?
Well, and Alan has been talking about this. At what point do they start to...
20%. Anything with a 2 in front of it. I said that yesterday. Malcolm thinks it's 31. As soon as his numbers go down to 31%, the Republicans will run to protect themselves by being willing to entertain the I word, the impeachment word. I say it's going to take into the 20s, with a 2 being the first number.
You know, the modern GOP party has really lost its backbone. They just peddle the party line, and they're willing to tolerate literally anything that happens with fellow GOP members. So
what would you do? What would you do if you were elected Republican congressman right now?
I think I would look critically at the issues, but, you know, they have – but you know, there are self-interested motives for politicians, because that popular base who are just banging their fist and like the whole Trump approach, you know, if that's what – you know, red states and Republican voters are clamoring for, then you just toe the party line and just, you know, show, you know, you just bow to the president when you see him.
The polls, Aaron, are showing exactly that. They're showing 80% of the Republicans are in favor of Trump. They're not deserting Trump. 80%.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean,
so when you have what was a 98 senators voting, passing the Russia sanction bill, rebuking the president. I mean, what is that a movement, or am I just trying to read more into that than there really is? Is it just wishful thinking on my part?
I think they're going to get him around the edges. That's what they're going to do. They know they poll too, right? So they know that the Russians aren't popular in the United States, and that the Russians have been our traditional enemies. So these gutless wonders—they're not going to take Trump on frontally, but they will back him up on something like that and say, okay, you know, we got to make it harder to take away those sanctions on the Russians, which is what basically that vote was all about.
I think things will get very interesting in the midterm elections, where, you know, congressional seats are up for grabs, and you might see Republicans taking different stand, you know, a year from now.
You are so right. I think that's what it's all about. It's all about 2018,
yeah,
because the game is lost. Right now, you got three houses of Republicans, you got a Republican Supreme Court, you got a Republican president. Now, you get a Republican House of Representatives with the subpoena power and everything else that they can be doing, and that is really going to be dangerous.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and Aaron Pasitti. And we will be back after this news from BBC. And again, panel@WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and Aaron Pasitti with us. And we welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Rod Rosenstein and the odd statement that he put out last night. Maybe a little context. In the last 25 minutes since we started this show, the president tweeted, and let's read into this for a moment, "I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director! Witch hunt."
But wait. Whoa. He's right. It's the man who told him, but who told the man? I told the man. The man then did what I told him, and now I'm saying the man. Man told me to fire him.
Is he saying that Mueller told him to fire Carl?
No, that Rod Rosenstein.
Yeah.
So the guy who...
Rosenstein to take the fall, mm-hmm, by writing that memo. It was clear he had to take the fall by doing
it. So he said, "I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt." So that would indicate to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, I don't think so, that...
Stage whisper.
Shakespeare
would be proud.
That he would, that then puts Rosenstein's statement last night into context, sure, as to how that all came about, right?
Right. No. Rosenstein had pressure, obviously, in order to say this, to defend the flag. And otherwise, he's fired, which would be...
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So
sure.
Is that
otherwise,
the next step?
Yeah.
Because we've been having our eyes on firing Mueller, but do you then fire the guy who wouldn't fire Mueller?
Well, one of the brilliant things that Malcolm Nann said yesterday, and I think it's great, is, okay, now you Rosenstein himself is going to have to appear before, you know, the investigative authorities, mm-hmm, and you don't lie to the FBI, and he's going to have to tell them the truth. So he has to lawyer up now. The president's lawyer has to lawyer up, and that's going to be very difficult. And then what happens when he goes? Let's say Trump fires him. And I think Malcolm said in the end, the guy who was sweeping up the floor is going to end up as the
full guy,
the head of custodial services. Yeah. Yes. On MSNBC this morning, they were saying that Rod Rosenstein, having done what he did, that maybe he was going to have to recuse himself too.
Yeah. Speaking Number of, two. I'm sorry to do this because I know you won't appreciate it, especially our leader Joe here. I watched a little bit this morning and I had to turn it off because Morning Joe Scarborough, who has been a huge antithetical force where Trump is concerned lately, seems to be turning the corner and saying, yes, of course they have a lawyer. Everybody needs a lawyer. Of course Pence has to get a lawyer. That's American. And I'm saying to myself, uh-oh, something's changed.
I wonder. It's hard to tell because there's so much frivolity on that show. So
I mean, you know, in with respect to Pence, like he really had no association with Trump prior to being called onto the ticket as the vice president. Pence is just probably trying to protect himself.
It's not like he's part
of this deep web of the Kushner, Trump, Russia, money, influence, and banking.
Aaron,
Pence is just probably trying to
maybe. Remember, at the end of Miracle on 34th Street, and they saw the cane lying there, and in the house that the kid wanted, and that was Santa Claus's cane. Says, I was a brilliant lawyer, but maybe. Anything's possible here. We do know one thing about this president and his relationship with everybody is it gets personal sooner or later. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's something personal that we don't know.
Could be.
Here.
Could be.
Let's go to some letters.
All right, Joe. Panel, I predict Trump will fire Mueller. He will incite a constitutional crisis, and the Republicans will be stuck in the middle. What, in capital letters, will they do? And that's George from Glenside, Pennsylvania.
Well, I used to live near Glenside, Pennsylvania.
What'd you say?
I used to live near Glenside, Pennsylvania.
No.
Yes.
Oh. What are the chances?
I think it's a former friend.
Oh, maybe it's your friend.
Yeah, or former friend. I don't recognize the name.
Did something happen? Okay, but wait.
Nothing I'm aware of.
Now, Joe, I want you to be the impartial umpire here. Haven't I been saying for quite a while now that Mueller will be fired in the same way Dick Nixon fired his people? I've been saying it all along.
You absolutely have. I just think with this most recent tweet that you now wonder. So Rosenstein has gone before Congress and the Senate and said, I'm not going to fire Mueller. So then.
No, he didn't. He said, I'm not going to fire Mueller without cause. That's
right.
What he said.
Okay. But my point being that if you have a guy there who is saying, I'm behind Mueller, I want him to do his job, then you fire that guy so that there's a new boss of Mueller.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's how you get down to the head of cleaning services at the Department of Justice. Barbara's shaking her head.
Yeah, that's really.
Back and forth. Okay, that's George.
Quite a picture.
Okay, maybe, says Parker. Says, maybe Aaron could answer the question that Teresa and others have been asking regarding the stock market rising despite Trump's difficulties. Aaron, it's all yours for 2 minutes.
You're on, man.
For 2 minutes. All right.
The stock market is based on psychology as much as it is based on economic fundamentals. And I think once Trump got elected with this pro-business agenda, stripping back regulations, and then a lot of his cabinet especially Cohen Mnuchin said that they're going to be rolling back a lot of the Dodd-Frank Act and the financial regulations. And I think just people are excited that, it's shifting to a more pro-business type of policy in the future, and the stock market's just betting on that because, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates earlier this week, and, that didn't seem to have an effect on the stock market very much. I think people are just overly optimistic about Trump's competence in actually accomplishing any of these things. And a lot of people are going to be sorely disappointed a couple months down the road.
So can we expect that if we have a little money in our TIAA-CREF or something like that, that we should take it out because if you think he's going to be impeached, or if you think there's going to be the House is going to be taken over by the Democrats, Would it be a smart move to take your money out of this already inflated stock market?
I am not a certified financial advisor.
Yes. Oh, really? You're not going to do that on the radio?
But of course, it's what we're all thinking.
In my opinion, the market's probably a little frothy, a little bit overvalued, and I think it's based on a lot of smoke and no fundamentals, and people are just hoping, they're trying to wish that the stock market's going to get higher and higher and higher with some of Trump's policies. But he's too incompetent, and he's too inept, and he's inflicting all of these wounds on himself that prevent him from doing anything policy related that would give the stock market a reason to actually go up.
So how could you explain to Trump that he's making mistakes? He doesn't think so, right?
No.
When he does these rather absurd tweets that he does, clearly isn't that an indication that he thinks he's doing right and that you can't talk him out of it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's in a very different mindset, to put it mildly, than most people. And
that perhaps was one of the most diplomatic things I've ever heard.
One last question.
I was trying so hard.
One last question, Aaron, because, you know, we don't get you often enough, and you are an economist, and you really do understand this stuff. So when he changes his hair color on a fairly regular basis, is that related to the stock market?
Barbara's eye roll was worth $1 million on that
it's
one.
It's too bad it's not television, right?
Yes,
side eye, people, side eye.
You know, back in the 80s, a lot of, financiers were betting on the direction of the stock market based on the color tie Alan Greenspan would wear when he talked in public.
Because we couldn't understand what he was saying, so
So look at his tie color. So, yeah, Greenspan's tie color, Trump's hair color. Read into it what you want.
Okay. Now comes from John. Do you know whether female members of Congress were invited to play in the game yesterday? Well, I did see Nancy Pelosi sitting next to the speaker.
Paul Ryan.
That's right.
Well, I don't know that they were playing.
I think they were the managers.
Yeah.
They were sitting there, and 26,000 people came out to see this thing, and they were, and Nancy Pelosi looked, very nice.
My understanding is that it was co-ed, and Teresa, who has played Teresa Bourgeois, our Teresa Bourgeois, had played in that league many times and said that it was co-ed. So I believe, although, I think the answer is yes.
But so how come the Democrats beat the stuffing out of the Republicans in
11-2.
Yeah. That's just extraordinary. We do know that the Democratic pitcher is a person of some note, and I forget who that was. But in fact, I never knew who it was, but I was told that the Democratic pitcher was great.
Al Franken, maybe?
Yeah. I just want to...
Okay, does anybody have the same feeling I have, which is you watch a hockey game, and they try to beat each other's brains out, right? And that's the analogy is Congress. Try to beat each other, but then at the end they walk out with their arms around each other. Mm-hmm. Does that not undermine our confidence in the level of debate and discussion that's going on now?
I don't understand what you mean. Are you saying they're not truly opposed because they can play baseball with each other?
No, or what? No, that's not what I mean, Aaron.
So, as an ice hockey player and a political economist, I think I can. Yeah. So yes, what happens on the hockey rink is that. It's rough, it's tumble, but that's the way the game's played. And then afterwards, you know, you make up and you shake
hands.
We
don't really hate each other.
But, no, right. But, you know, with what's happening in Congress.
Did you ever see the Morning Ralph, Morning Sam cartoons?
No. Should I?
Yeah, maybe you're too young. You ever see those cartoons where
I may be too old because I don't know.
No, you're not in this case. But they're Looney Tunes. The sheepdog comes in and the wolf, the coyote comes in and they punch the clock. And they, Morning Ralph, Morning Sam, and then they go in and they start trying to kill each other. And then at the end of the day, they clock out and they say, have a good day, Ralph, have a good day. Same thing, right?
But I did want to respond to what Barbara said. I am saying that here so many Americans are involved in this fight. Take away people's health care, take away, Social Security maybe, take away this and that. And we take it very seriously. And then we see these folks saying, let's now be nice to each other. There's nothing to be nice to them about, I think.
I think this is a moment because of the shootings that occurred.
Sure.
I think that it might be a level below which even they cannot go. In other words, that they know that the eyes of the nation are looking at them after this horrible tragic situation, and perhaps even they are thinking, we can't really show that we want to wring each other's necks or, you know, don't really get along. So I think we saw something similar. Haven't there been some other incidents when like at the State of the Union, Congress people would sit with each other? And I don't know if that followed
the aisle shooting.
Shooting of Congress member Giffords. I don't remember when that happened, but it was kind of a show of unity. as opposed to actual unity.
So, Barbara, sorry for interrupting. Do you think then that they mean it? Or is it just...
I can't presume to get into the mind of very well-off cisgendered white men. Can't. That just, you know, that's a bridge too far for me. I don't know how they think or what they think. My observation from my point of view is that they have a lot in common, and that those of us who are not a part of, you know, that demographic, we often watch from the sidelines. Even the bonding rituals, you know, over sports, etc. Women are excluded from that. You know, queer people are excluded from that. Black people, depending on the sport, may be, you know, running the floor. it just depends. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but I'm not talking about professional
on that
sports.
Particular
I'm
culture.
Not talking about professional
so,
sports.
So back to work here, if I may.
Okay, we got to take a break.
I don't know. I don't know if it's real or not.
Okay, I always assume the worst.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, really.
I didn't know that.
I mean, I see it every day. So if Andrew Cuomo, for example, appoints the first gay guy to the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals in New York, the highest court. Is he doing it because it's the right thing to do? Is he doing it because, hey, this is a demographic I need? I don't know, and you're quite right, Barbara. How do you get inside somebody's mind?
I would hope he appointed that person because he was the best qualified. I would hope.
We'll leave it there for the moment. Let's take a break.
I have hope, too.
When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. We've been talking about the Rod Rosenstein statement made late last night. I say late last night. It was about 9:30, but it felt late. It felt very late. It said Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials, in quotations, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch or agency of government with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. A few hours later, early this morning, Preet Bharara tweeted and said, Americans should also exercise caution before accepting as true lies about firing of FBI director and defamation of a war hero special counsel.
Wow. I always love Preet Bharara.
Nice. Well done, Preet.
Well done, Preet. Thanks. So there you go. Go ahead, Alan. We got some letters.
All right. At what point are the slanders and libelous statements by the president on camera and on Twitter against Mueller considered obstruction of justice? That's interesting. Based on the great personal and professional toll it takes on Mueller and his family. How is this not, at a minimum, undue influence? Can someone issue a restraint on Trump and is addressing the investigation and Mueller publicly until it draws to a close? The answer to that is no. I mean, you take the job, you know you're in the public sector, and people are going to yell at each other. And there's nothing you can do about it.
But, you know, about the thing about public statements, though, if I have this right,
and
we have such a torrent of news that I sometimes can get these things wrong, but when this originally happened, we were told that, Rosenstein had sent the report out to, when I say this originally happened, the firing of Comey. That we were originally told that it was about Hillary Clinton and the botching of that job,
right.
And that
mm-hmm.
Rosenstein had sent this memo and blah, 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 blah. And then 2 days later, the president is on Lester Holt on NBC News, and he says, hey, Lester, look, I looked at it, and I looked at this Russian thing, and I made the decision. Rosenstein had nothing to do with it. I made the decision, and I said, I'm firing Comey. I made the decision.
And the reason that that's so important is that you don't know who's saying what behind the scenes. Rosenstein is saying, hey, you set me up here, and if this happened, you know, I'm going to quit. And then they have to pacify Rosenstein by his going to Lester Holt and saying that.
So we got the guy on tape, and then you have a tweet this morning that says, well, he told me to do it. Well, I don't know. That I mean, so
nothing means anything.
That's right. Nothing means anything.
Right. Yeah.
To the point of this letter of, at what point are do you look at these statements and that they mean anything to anybody or to any court because they're just so all over the place?
34%, 36%, that's what it means, something. Everything is being played to the base. Everything is being played to the base. And he sees it that way. That's the way he got elected, and he considers that's the way he's going to survive.
Yeah, I mean, this is
the— And he said so, by the way.
This is the Bannon strategy of just creating chaos.
Our wonderful Barbara, who was there yesterday, says, impeachment is a long political process, even when and if the Republicans get in line. On the other hand, a sitting president, and this is a fascinating line, cannot be prosecuted. We don't know that. We don't know that they can't. It's just never been adjudicated. I went on the air, perhaps a little bit crazy yesterday, and said, take it to the max. Let's just say Trump. Kill somebody in his family.
Yeah, I'm cleaning it up for you,
yeah.
Alan.
Kill somebody in his family.
Thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, you're wonderful, Barbara. And then I had to go explain it. So Trump himself said I could stand on Fifth Avenue and do something terrible.
Right.
Yeah,
think he did say kill somebody.
Yeah, kill somebody, and nobody would care. My base would not care. That's what it's about. But we don't know, Barbara, yet, because it would have to be adjudicated.
Right.
If Trump did a— the narrative that is existing now, right now, the legal narrative seems to be you got to be impeached before you can be indicted criminally. You have to be kicked out of office. But I think if you take it to its logical conclusion, that if he did kill somebody, they would have to indict him, right?
At the risk of, I mean,
one would think.
Are you going to let him walk around the White House if he killed somebody and you know it?
At the risk of going off a little bit on the subject, but just because I'm interested in it, to your point about this, that we have never gotten there yet, right? We have never as a nation gotten there yet. I see the same thing when it comes to the Emoluments Clause. I keep on hearing as the rationale that this doesn't apply to Donald Trump because it's never been enacted before, that the Emoluments Clause has never been put to a test before.
Sure.
Well, there's always a first time, right? I mean, I don't think you can look at it and say and just dismiss it because we haven't used it since 1787.
Right. And now we have somebody who's president whose career has been in business and not the military or government.
And
you know, worldwide global business dealings. And to the extent that it's going to be used the first time, this seems to be a pretty good candidate for it just because of it.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
No,
I really
fine.
Am.
Go ahead.
But what would happen if Neil Gorsuch goes home to dinner and talk to his lovely wife and says, oh, brother, this one is coming at me because he's going to be the deciding vote. He is going to be the vote that they're counting on, that they put him there to defend the flag. So,
well, if you're a strict, you know, constitutionalist lawyer, then there would be grounds for.
To which I would say, you're kidding. In other words, it seems to me. Now, don't take this the wrong way, because I hear this from a lot of people. But it seems to me to say you have to do your job and not worry about the political implications. Rosenstein must be saying that right now, you know, that people are yelling that at him. People are yelling at John Faso. How could you vote for that stinking bill, health care bill, and saying just do your job, do it right. But it ain't the way the world works.
All right. One more, and then we're going to take a break.
Okay. Yeah. One more. Thank you, Barbara. Does the panel think that Justice Kennedy will retire this summer? I don't know. Will retire this summer. Will he want to take advantage of current Republican dominance, or will he be restrained by the unstable national climate? Now, Kennedy's an interesting guy in that he is capable of coming down on either side. He breaks the rule I was just being cynical about. He does what he thinks is right most of the time.
I see a tough time of any Supreme Court justice retiring before 2018.
And he's not the senior on that thing, I think.
I was going to ask about his age, yes.
No,
in comparison with the others.
Well, it's Ginsburg, isn't it?
Ginsburg, I think, has got to be the oldest.
Okay, we're going to break.
My hero.
We're going to break for news. The breaking story, another story that has nothing to do with politics, but Whole Foods has been bought up by Amazon. in a deal worth $13.7 billion. So
he's got a lot of cash over there, Bezos.
Amazon wants a brick-and-mortar presence, that certainly is one. All right, we're going to go over to news with Ray. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our last segment of the morning for the panel. And we have Alan Chartok here, Barbara Smith, and Aaron Pasitti. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. It is we have quite a few today, so let's get to as many as we can.
Hi, panel.
Hi. Mm-hmm.
We hear the Russians want a so-called chaos. Is that Trump's strategy or Bannon's, with all the differing positions, and to what end? Well, I think that Trump finds something very attractive about Bannon being there, because Bannon is speaking for those people in America who believe that you know, the middle finger is the appropriate signal to people.
And I just want to say, this is might be veering off a little bit, but one of the things we may not get to is this, what I consider to be a false equivalency between Democrats and Republicans, right and left, as far as the atmosphere of extreme division and hate in this nation. With the shootings that happened a couple of days ago, the rhetoric is that, oh yes, the last campaign was the worst that has ever been, it was so vicious, et cetera, et cetera, as if both sides in the campaign were equally vicious and violent. Hillary Clinton got criticized. The only time she attacked a group, it was a group of people who were being so hateful and bigoted toward the rest of us, if you see what I'm saying. And that was when she used that term, basket of deplorables. But as far as making fun of people with disabilities or calling into question the legitimacy of the Muslim couple whose son was killed in the service of this nation, that's all on the other side. And with Bannon, who is affiliated with a recognized hate organization or hate movement, the alt-right, I don't really like the fact that the atmosphere that is being described, this horrible environment of hatred, is all of our responsibilities equally. And I think the fact that the person who was the shooter was a person who identified with progressive left Democratic politics, all of the above probably, that was the circumstance of that incident. It doesn't necessarily characterize the origins of where all this conflict is coming from at this time, the level of hate crimes in the nation that we have now as a result of what has been put before us. That tells his tale.
I love what you just said. Really, I think you are exactly right. Good morning, panel. In the days before Newt Gingrich, there was actual civility in Congress. When Newt came to Washington, he encouraged members to live in D.C. and have their families at home, whereas the families used to live in D.C. and socialize together, children going to school together. Do you remember that Ted Kennedy and the senator from Utah, it was Orrin Hatch, I guess, were great friends? Newt changes that culture, and we have what we have now. Trump shenanigans will be tolerated as long as the markets are stable, says Edward. Alan is right. Trump will fire Special Prosecutor Mueller. They will hang him with the leaks. Mueller's reputation is that he runs leak-proof operations. The fact that the leaks will be the reason he will fire Mueller. I can't help but remember Martha Mitchell every time Trump tweets. Because, you know, she used to get on, for you kids, she used to get on the telephone and talk to reporters ad nauseum. And that's, I'm sure, what is being said here. Peter says, the Lee Atwaterization of politics has resulted in politicians treating their adversaries as enemies. And this is interesting, considering the very fine words you just said, Barbara, because Lee Atwater died, and before he died, he recanted. He recanted what he had said, and he had been the torchbearer for all of this hate stuff. The purpose of one party is now to bring down the other. Issue seems to only serve that goal. I don't see this how this improves. It's like a ratchet. It only turns one way, Peter, in New Paltz. Jason says, wasn't Trump and the birther movement a bigger witch hunt or whitewater? That's Jason from Ulster Park. Lori says, Thank you very much for yesterday's live panel broadcast with the brilliant Malcolm Nance and the brilliant panel. It was great to be there. I must disagree with you regarding Pence. I abhor Trump, but fear impeachment and do not think that Pence and company would be chastened. Pence believes he was sent by God to implement his terrible plans, and he has credibility next to Trump. He looks like an adult, parenthesis mother, notwithstanding. He also knows his way around government, and I fear that he could accomplish more than Trump, who often so shoots himself in the foot with foolish tweets.
I totally concur.
Exactly.
I do have to say, though, that we followed that very quickly yesterday when we were talking about that, about, but how does he come out of this unscathed of not being complicit with what else is going on in the White House? I mean, as being a part of the transition team, being a part, it's hard to figure that if there is the fire where the smoke seems to be leading us, that he wasn't a part of that.
Remember when we didn't like George Bush? George W. Bush.
He seems like such a statesman at this point.
Well, yeah, but...
It's just frightening.
And that's a low bar.
Yeah. Well, but the point really is, I think Pence is more of a Bushian than he is of a Trumpian.
Oh, he's a...
Oh, I don't even see them being similar. But you go ahead, Aaron. Go ahead.
You know, I agree with that. You know, I mean, Pence in his social barbarism, I think, is a better way to put that than conservatism. Well, Trump's all about adulation and making money and using the office for profit. And I see Pence as being more savvy and doing a lot more egregious
damage.
Social harm.
He was Bush, however, both Bushes, but particularly W, played to the alt-right too in his narrative. He did that. And I suspect that we may see, if Pence ever gets there, and I don't know that he will, that Pence is more in that tradition. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think so. I think he is far to the right of George W. Bush. Well, far to the right.
Well, it has to be now.
No, I think he believes that. He is ideologically a fundamentalist, and I think that when you look at his some of his legislation or some of the legislation he promoted and approved when he was governor of Indiana, it's just frightening.
I defer to you, Barbara.
Well, the thing is, I was looking this up yesterday while we were at the panel. I was looking up because you were having that line of discussion during it, and I said, what about the fact that when he was a governor, imposed that anyone who had an abortion or even a miscarriage had to provide burial.
Yeah, you know.
Burial services. I got it clarified. It wasn't that they had to have a funeral with mourners, but they did have to indeed do something that was akin to dealing with somebody who was actually already born.
You know, I see everybody at their typewriters. That just shows you how old they are. But I see everybody at their computers right now writing me and saying, no, Alan. But, you know, Reagan and the Bushes, they all played that anti-abortion card as hard as they could. Come on, Barbara, they did. You know, they may not have meant it, and I don't know that they did, but they sure played the card.
I see Pence is more like Reagan than he is like Bush, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
As far politically, I think that Pence is more like Ronald Reagan than he is like Bush. Bush, after all, right after 9/11, didn't he go to a mosque? He certainly made statements about how we can't vilify Muslims. That was really, I can't see either one of those guys doing that.
Dear panel friends, I don't think it's fair to read into the fact that Vice President Pence has retained an attorney. Of course, disclaimer, this coming from an attorney. Remember, Flynn was fired for lying to Mr. Pence, so he will likely be asked to testify and turn over records, and that's from Scott in Pittsfield, who is an attorney. Jim says, it strikes me that there are two things going on. One, an important investigation into cyber attacks, an ever more sophisticated agitprop that may or may not also undercover wrongdoing by some Americans. Two, a concerted effort by much of the press and the Democrats to bring down Trump in any way possible. And number two, muddies number one, and that's from Jim. Michael says, increased Russian sanctions. As a first-generation Ukrainian-American, I'm watching the path of those sanctions closely. It will be interesting how Ryan and the House will respond to this. In yesterday's panel, it was mentioned that two senators voted no. From what I read, it was Paul and Sanders, not Lee, that voted no. Sanders was concerned about Iran sanctions that were tacked on to the legislation. Keep up the good work. Mike from Ackard. And Barbara says, is all the venom towards Hillary just a ploy to distract his base? The tweets are so demeaning to his position as POTUS and the U.S. internationally. Let's hope the investigations can move forward quickly, Barbara. There's been a good deal of punditry about not moving forward too quickly for the Democrats. Not too quickly before 2018, because, you know, if this thing peters out before then, they don't win the House. And you watch these guys get up before the microphones on CNN. They say, let's move with all judicial caution and let's move slowly. These are the Democrats saying that. Christine says, I was so moved by the news on NPR this morning that the Democrats gave their winning trophy to the Republicans to place in Steve Scalise's office until he returns. After all the horrific gun violence in America, is this finally the tipping point for sensible gun control? No.
No. It's not. No. Because they're not even talking about that.
I know. They haven't even talked about it. That is interesting.
It's not even a subject.
How could those babies in
Connecticut,
be murdered and these horrible people say, because there was a great piece on NPR this morning that showed that when states like Massachusetts had tough gun laws, which we do in my state, as opposed to some of the places like Louisiana, there's no question there is a relationship between gun control laws and what the murder rate is. Okay.
I'm nodding yes.
Stacy says, hi, panel. I would like to offer maybe Rosenstein was referring to the money connection, in other words, through Cyprus banks. Just a thought, S. McCall. And Michael says, murder is not a good example to use in exploring the hypothetical criminal prosecution of a sitting president. Presidents sign off on people's lives every day. Killing people is a part of the job description. I defer to you. You're right. I was just trying to make a point about specific a specific criminal violation. And Paul says, almost seems better to have Trump juggle the daily mess than to revert to the, quote, old days when he was focusing on denying the poor their health care and trying to keep out the foreigners. That's from Paul. And
I mean, that's the silver lining to all this chaos, is that he's got no political capital or energy or mental focus to do anything substantive, and perhaps that's a good thing.
Let's see what comes out of that Senate on health care before July 4th. Joni says, I saw two in that game. Linda Sanchez of California walked and got a huge ovation. I think she played second base as well. The other got a hit. Pretty sure she was Nanette Barragan, also of California. And that's from Joni. All right. And then the last letter I have to read here is from Charles, who says, I think the Republicans are willing to let Trump loot, grift, and make an ass out of himself. And them, as long as he signs whatever they put in Putina, front of high. I have no idea what this means. I'm just reading
now. Yeah.
This is all part of the neocon long game plan. I think they never expected him to win, but now that he's there, they will milk him for all they can, and don't expect the Dems to take back the House in 2018. We have been gerrymandered out of that chance. Well, you know, you are right. The gerrymander certainly favors the Republicans. There's no question about it. Nevertheless, we in this country have had what we call realigning elections from time to time. We had it over Watergate. We have it at other times. So even when they draw their own lines and they make sure that they can win, because most state legislatures are now in the hands of the Republicans, there comes that point when it's just too much and people say no. That's why I think.
And the Democrats have to get their act together and start figuring out a more populist platform, because that's what the country is clamoring for, with wage stagnation and inequality just ravaging communities.
That's right, Aaron. And not only that.
Better get it together.
But there's another story here. picking good candidates.
Yeah.
If you take these last couple of by-elections that we have seen, they pick bad candidates. Guys from out of state, guys who are singers, guys who are talk show hosts, whatever. I'm making that one up. But you have to find good, substantial candidates to run for these offices. There are six or seven people who want to run against John Faso right now. I've talked to some of them. I have to tell you, they're impressive, but they're very young often. And they don't really have the name recognition that would help them win.
Well, speaking about that and looking at the future, I see someone who I'd love to see go to higher office, and that's Kamala Harris.
Oh boy, she's terrific.
And the only higher office for her would be president. So
yeah.
Let us talk in our remaining moments about the health care bill and the secrecy surrounding the Senate health bill, which is raising alarms. As the New York Times points out, in both parties, as they draft legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Senate Republican leaders are aiming to transform large sections of the American healthcare system without a single hearing on their bill and without a formal open drafting session. This has created an air of distrust and concern on and off Capitol Hill with Democrats, but also with Republicans. Senator Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, said, I've said this from day one, I'll say it again, the process is better if you do it in public and that people get buy-in along the way and understand what's going on. Obviously, that is not the route that is being taken.
So can I correct you on something, Joe?
Of course.
So it's not a health care bill. It's a
tax
cut. It's a tax cut for wealthy Americans.
Yes.
At the expense of...
You're actually
of,
correcting the New York Times.
Okay, I'm correcting the New York Times. Your reading of the New York Times. But
yes.
No, this bill is a transfer of $600 billion from middle-class people without insurance to millionaires, plain and simple. And that's why they don't want it coming to the surface. That's why they don't want hearings on it. Millionaires will be $51,000 a year better off if this bill passes, while middle class families earning less than $50,000 will be a couple thousand dollars worse off. So this is an upward redistribution of wealth, and that's exactly why they're trying to hide it.
And that example that they always give of somebody. Of somebody who's about 64 years old and makes about $25,000 or $24,000 a year, who's paying a little over $1,000 now for their health coverage, with this will be kicked up to what, $14,000, $16,000 a year.
And what is one of the weakest arguments I think I've heard in a really long time is Mitch McConnell, who says, look, over the last 7 years, we've had gazillions of hearings on this very topic.
Yeah
not
now, right.
And not right. on this bill.
But not on this bill.
That's crazy.
We've been dealing with this issue for 7 years, and we've been talking about this. So don't you tell us that this is private.
That is like malfeasance and malpractice.
It's turtle talk.
I mean, it's reprehensible. He is a reprehensible person.
Okay, really quickly. Barbara Smith is a national treasure from Teresa. Her well-reasoned arguments on topics that can be emotional are much appreciated. Thank you, Barbara, says Joan. Pence reeks of dominionism beliefs, and Trump has to go so we can go on stopping Pence fundamentalist beliefs. That's from Joan. And Rick says, I have to challenge you guys on letting Bush off the hook so easily. The seeds of division were planted under Ronald Reagan's regime, but then the ball was taken by Karl Rove, Cheney, etc. And a divisiveness in this country really began in the early 2000s. We're now experiencing the fruits of the seeds that have been planted.
And just for our listeners, look up Dominionism or the Dominion movement. You'll easily find that that is a particular strain of right-wing, very, very dangerous practices and thought, probably, I think, including some violence.
All right. We are out of time.
No.
My thanks to our wonderful panel and for all of the wonderful letters that we received and for the other ones that were there, but necessarily not wonderful. But anyway, our thanks to Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and Aaron Pasitti. Thank you very much. Have a beautiful weekend. Happy Father's Day to all dads out there. We'll be back with another half of the show after this.